Hi, Mike. Good to
Hi,
speak to you
Imran.
again.
Yeah.
So in our last few episodes, we've been talking largely about the carnivore diet, giving our reasons as to why we came to it in the first place, which I think boils down to, if we could summarize it as simply as possible, to improve our health. So that begs the question, which we touched on a bit last time, of what exactly are we talking about when we are using this word health? It can encompass a huge amount of things. So I think today's
Yeah,
conversation will be quite
frozen.
wide-ranging. Okay.
Oh,
So I.
you just froze for a moment there. So I missed that last
Okay.
bit.
Sure. So today, I
What
think we'll
is, begs the
explore.
question, what is?
We'll explore the question of what exactly are we talking about when we're talking about health. So I expect it's going to be quite a wide-ranging conversation, as there's many different ways to unpack this. And you were saying a few minutes ago before we started that you had a look at a few definitions of health. You had a look at one from the World Health Organization,
Yeah,
which
that's right.
actually quite like myself. Have you got that to hand?
Yeah, I have. Just as the thought that popped into my mind when we were saying about carnivore, we turn to carnivore to improve our health. I think what would be interesting to explore as part of this is what we thought was wrong with our health in the first place that made us think that we needed to do something. It was like, what was the impact on our lives, our health? But going back to World Health Organization. So I came across this. I just Googled what is health, and came up with an article from Medical News Today. So Medical News Today, obviously just the medical view on life by the looks of it. But 1948, the World Health Organization defined health with a phrase that modern authorities still apply. Health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. Just like yourself, I quite like the idea of that. They cover physical as well as mental health and the social well-being as well, which is really important. What are the bits about it you like? Why do you like it, Imran?
Because I think so many people now see health merely as the absence of illness or disease. I think such a limited way to look at things, such a huge limit to put on yourself. Just to give an example, I was looking for stock images for a magazine I was working for where we were writing some articles on health. And if you type into the stock image websites the word world or the word health, typically what comes up is lots of pictures of doctors, stethoscopes, insides of hospitals.
Oh
And
dear.
I thought that's really interesting. That says something about the, the cultural thought on what health is. It's going for checkups and making sure that you're not broken. Rather than setting a much higher ideal of what's possible, what's the best you can be. So I've always preferred to look at it from that point of view. And I'm glad that the World Health Organization has quite a strong statement on this because whatever else you might say about them, might not agree with every policy that they put
Yeah.
out. At least that mission statement's pretty positive.
I think it is as well. And to expand on that this medical idea of health is basically a bunch of numbers or scans or whatever that determine whether you're healthy or not. And that to me is, like yourself, such a narrow view. Without being too cynical, but just introducing the idea of when we look at the medical aspect of health, that you come up with these pictures of doctors and stuff, where culturally we are taught to say that the medical profession are the experts in this. But an oft quoted observation is that when you do a medical degree, you don't learn about health, you learn about disease. And so actually, you know, the idea that the medical fraternity are the experts on health, it is interesting, because we're not taught about what health is. It's like, it is this idea of, well, let's get rid of disease. You have a disease, we need to get rid of that. And once we've got rid of that, you are now healthy. So yeah, the World Health Organization, you know, goes beyond that. I mean, mental, our psychological and emotional well-being, how we think, are we depressed, are we anxious? Those types of things massively play a part. And where do we fit in society as well, with friends, communities, family, that side of things? Because that will, I think, when we look at the further discussions we're going to have, will, I think it will be obvious to all that that plays a role in how healthy we are.
Yep. You posed the question a couple of minutes ago, what issues were we having, or what were the things that we were looking to improve with our own health that brought us towards a carnivore diet?
Mm-hmm.
So, we did mention this in quite a bit of detail on the last podcast, but let's just cover that again briefly. So what were your reasons for coming to a carnivore diet?
Well, I think it... For me, it was the idea that I struggled to maintain the weight I wanted to, and that had an impact on my life. So it wasn't just about the weight, it was the impact that it was having on what I was doing. And again, I think certainly from my philosophical view on health, and this will come out later on, is I've been trying to design a life that keeps me healthy. And as I'm finding out, there are several obstacles to that. You know, I look at nature and, you know, most of the animals in nature that don't seem to have significant interference from us seem to keep healthy just through their day-to-day living. That's not something that is apparent in a lot of human life, in human society. So I was struggling. Got myself a physical job. I used to work in an office, but I didn't like where that was going. I got cancer, I had back operations and stuff, so I knew I needed to be physical. So I got myself a physical job, but then I couldn't cope with the physical demands of the job. One, partly because of my weight, I was continually getting injured and stuff like that. So carnivore for me was the promises that came out, or the claims that came out of the carnivore field, were that I could physically be optimal, which encouraged me, because I want to be. I still want to get physically better and achieve more physically than I have done previously. But also there was a mental aspect to it as well, this idea of certainly ketogenic diets being looked at in terms of addiction and being able to overcome compulsive behaviours and stuff like that, and manage my dopamine from an ADHD point of view, distractibility, emotional reactivity, all of those types of things. So that was why I turned to carnivore. Health to me was being able to do the things I wanted to do and feel good whilst doing them, I guess.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So to be clear, I eat occasionally a strict carnivore diet, and then at other times I eat something that's close to it. I do eat other foods, but I've described the way I eat as being animal-based. So a significant amount of the nutrition that I have is coming from animal foods. So I do eat other foods as well. I'm fortunate in that I've never had any serious health challenges. So I wasn't coming at it from that point of view. And over a period of many years, I'd kind of worked towards this way of eating. So I was trying to always optimize the way I eat and my lifestyle and exercise in general. I think probably when I was younger, my goals were more short term. I was more concerned with how I looked and how much weight I could lift in the gym and things like that. And gradually those timelines extended out. to thinking about, okay, well, how can I be healthy longer term? So I was on this path of generally making improvements, and I found that I wanted to eat more and more protein. I think that was largely driven by, again, I wouldn't call it a health problem, but it's something that I wanted to solve. It's appetite regulation. I always just had a huge appetite. I was brought up eating quite a high carbohydrate diet, and I can just eat carbohydrates infinitely. Perhaps I'm lucky in that I don't put on a substantial amount of body fat if I do, but I can just eat them and eat them until I'm uncomfortably full, but still not really feeling satisfied. So over a period of years, I, you know, gradually figured out that more protein and more fat were the ways to go for me. I had long-term gut issues as well. That was probably one of the big factors that I wanted to solve. And again, those things have gradually improved over the years. So I was hearing, similar to yourself, these promises coming from the carnivore community, people who've been doing it longer than us. And improved gut health is a common one that you'll hear people talk about. Improved athletic performance, generally being a bit leaner, more muscular, quicker recovery from exercise. So all of those things are things that I'm interested in. And I'm willing to jump in and with both feet and try things out. I wasn't too far away from a carnivore diet anyway, as I said. So, yeah, those are my reasons for coming to it. I guess it's more of a kind of long-term approach to optimization, really.
So that immediately raises to me, we both have similar but also different reasons, and health to us seems, again, there are similarities. We both want to improve athletically. We both want to improve mentally, longevity, and we're both thinking about the long term, which I think is, one of the principles that I think we talked about introducing in this is like, we plan for a lot of other things long term, but we often don't plan for our health long term, whatever that is. But what's becoming apparent to me is that whilst there might be a general definition of health, like the World Health Organization, it's very difficult to be objective about it. In fact, I think health, there is a massive subjective internal component to it, as in, like, what does it mean to me? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to someone else? And so I think it's dangerous to go down a totally objective view of this, because that raises sort of historical philosophies such as, the Aryan nation and all this side of things, and certain characters who decided what the perfect human being should be. So, for me, I think it's just like, this is where we discussed this before we started this, but it's worth coming back to it. On this medical news article, there was this, just after this idea that health is a state of physical, mental and social well-being, not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. They then went on to clarify that in 1986, that health is a resource for everyday life, not the objective of living. Health is a positive concept emphasizing social and personal resources as well as physical capacities. Now, we talked about this, didn't we, about the resource for everyday life. I kind of do and I don't like that idea. It sort of makes it sound something like money or food or gold or whatever. Is something that we can stockpile, we can build, we can stockpile, we can accumulate and then have ready for our use. I don't think health is something that we can stockpile. I think health is a result of day-to-day behaviors amongst other things that we'll come to. But I do like this introduction. It's not the objective of living. Because I think sometimes it's very easy for, people like ourselves podcasting about health and things like that, certainly in my life, I felt that sometimes health has just been my objective, is to live and die healthy. Whilst I'm not sure about this idea, they then go on to say, Medical News Today goes on to say, this means that health is a resource to support an individual's function in wider society rather than an end in itself. So, yeah, I like the idea that health shouldn't be the objective of living. I think it should be a byproduct of living. If we look at nature, we go into much, much bigger philosophical discussions about what is an individual's function in wider society and that health is there to support that. I think that is because of where this is coming from in terms of Medical News Today and the whole wider Western view of life, that health is something that we should be so that we can play our role in society. I think that's worthy of discussion in itself. I'd be interested to explore more maybe Eastern philosophies or religious philosophies and have a look at that as well. But this idea that health can support us to live the life that we want to live. But I'd like to maybe turn that around, and also the life that we live is a key determinant of our health. So this is like, there's this bi-directional or circular relationship that what you can't untangle one from the other. What do you think about that?
My thoughts exactly on that. So the first thing that springs to mind is this cliche that you hear people say sometimes, that we're human beings, not human doings. And I think in the West, I know I'm guilty of this, of defining myself by what I'm doing all the time. And this definition, this secondary definition that you've given, talking about health being a resource for what we do, it feels a little mechanistic to me. That feels like they're separating what we do from our health in some way. Almost a layer on top. So it comes to really the way that you define health. So I would define health in the most holistic way that I can. And your sense of purpose, the things that you do with your life, are an intrinsic part of that. So I agree with you in that I think we can't really separate these things. Our life, hopefully, we live in a way that supports our health, but it also plays back the other way. It's a really difficult thing to unpick. I think that we can't really ignore the spiritual aspect of what we're talking about, and perhaps having a sense of purpose, whatever that means to the individual. Well, we see from research on this, we talked about the Blue Zones studies, we see that people who do have a sense of purpose, perhaps it's faith-based, perhaps it's following a certain religion, regardless of what that bit can be, does have an impact on their longevity. So I feel like that secondary definition that's given by the World Health Organization, it's almost like a step back from the previous one, which sounded more holistic to me.
Well, there I suggest that it's part of the cultural programming. Health supports us doing what we need to do. And how do we know what we need to do? We're told by our wider society what we need to do. For me, that's
maybe a little bit one other thing as well. One other thing. You said that sometimes you felt as though your purpose in life had become to be healthy, and maybe that's slightly out of balance. Well, I would argue that if you've got a wide enough view of what it means to be healthy, then that's the highest thing that you can pursue. So it depends on your individual view of what it means to be healthy. So I think we've all each got to think about that and come to something that makes sense for us.
Yeah. And I think it's worth, no, yeah, that's interesting that you raised that. I mean, because I at the moment, I view my purpose is actually discussions like this, is like opening up, broadening the conversation on what health is and how we can get our best health and our optimal health, because you see so much unnecessary suffering. I'm going to say some suffering is necessary, because I think that's part of what drives humans and how we grow and how we find new ideas, we overcome obstacles, you know, all sorts. And I don't think you can avoid suffering, but it's the unnecessary suffering and perhaps the exploitative suffering that goes on that, I think hopefully, you know, not just me, many other people want to see. And I know many people want to see that overcome. And I think this idea of, you know, this medicalized view is pushing it into this little machinery. We are cogs in the machine. And the only reason we need to be healthy is to fulfill our function in society. And the way to be healthy is to do what we tell you to do, which is take these medications, have your exercise prescription, whatever it is, you know, all of that side of things. And in fact, if you go on to read the rest of that article, there's not dissimilar things, you know, is take this, do that. But I think you touched there on the spirituality, the idea of being. That sense that we are part of a bigger thing, and for that bigger thing to be the best thing it can be, we need to be the best that we can be. And that purpose, our calling in life, what people, this is something that I think for many people, that purpose is just to exist. And it's not really a purpose, it's just a necessity. It's like that's handed down to us through our genes.
I'm glad you mentioned the frustration that you feel at seeing people suffer unnecessarily. I think that's been my primary motive for getting into this line of work and exploring these ideas. I think as a person, I'm drawn to problem solving, and seeing people suffer from things which could have been avoided or which could be dealt with better, could be fixed more easily, I find incredibly frustrating. If I have a problem, I'm immediately drawn to trying to figure out how I can overcome it, why it happened in the first place. And I think it's very unfortunate that a good many people don't feel that they have much agency over their health. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. We have been programmed for a long time to think that the biggest determinants of your health are your genes, and it's almost like a written fate, something that's coded into your body that you can't do anything about, although people are starting to think differently about that now. That's a message that I'd really like to get out to people as much as possible, that people have an immense amount of influence over their health. And these things don't have to be complicated. It can get really, really esoteric and difficult if you start getting into the weeds. But primarily, I believe that all animals are designed to be healthy, however we're defining that. I'll just define that now as having vitality and energy and some level of resilience to threats. Let's just say physical threats, disease, other stresses. I think that all animals are designed to have that. When they're living in accordance to an environment that they're evolved to be in. So I think our problem now that we're facing is our environment has evolved so quickly in a relatively short space of time that it bears very little resemblance to the environment that caused us to become human, that made us what we are.
Yeah, I think you raised some fascinating points there, Imran. For me, this idea, the design thing, I find an interesting thing is like, were we designed or not? I think we are the result of an evolutionary process, and that's something I accept now. I know not everybody does accept that, but for now, that's what informs a lot of my thinking of it, and I believe for yourself as well. So I agree totally that when a creature interacts with its environment in the way that it evolved to, then health becomes, it's just a natural outcome, because you have to be healthy to survive, to fight, to get your food, to build your shelter, to have social interactions with your other creatures, and to give birth, and then to be able to nurture your young ones so that they can go through the same thing. You mentioned that we've evolved our environment. Yeah, so there's this, with the development of the human brain, consciousness, our ability to imagine and stuff, we've created all sorts of differing environments that weren't realities for us as chimpanzees, maybe. Cultural environment, political environment, business environment, financial environment, legal environment, technological environment. We've changed, so our habitat has changed. We actually changed the landscape around us. We've changed so much. We've gone from living outdoors and being outside 95% of the time to being inside 95% of the time. And what I've read is now leading us to see that has an impact on our health, our ability to perform. But we also now we have these competing evolutionary drivers, for want of a better word. Our survival now depends on us being able to function in a cultural environment and not just a natural environment. It's not just about getting food and shelter and procreation. We now have to, getting food this day is being supplanted. We have to be good at something else that we can exchange in value for money, so that we can then go and buy our food and buy our house. So that has given us tremendous challenges. It's not to say it's good or bad. It's just there's a lot of challenge in that, and potentially why we find being healthy so difficult, because how we live life today is so far removed from the millions of years that shaped us.
So in this incredibly complex, confusing environment that we find ourselves in compared to the environment we imagine of our past, though it's difficult to accurately say exactly how things were, I think sometimes we idealize it a little bit. But in this modern situation we find ourselves in, how do you yourself now measure or track or aim for something that tells you you're on the right path?
Okay, so from a physical side, if we go back to that World Health Organization and use that as a framework, how I actually probably do think about it personally. Physically, how am I feeling? Can I do physically the things I want to do? Can I get stronger? Can I get fitter? Do I adapt well to demands that I put on my body? Do I wake up aching every day, or do I have chronic pain that I can't get rid of? If I'm largely free of that or totally free of it, then I consider myself more physically healthy. From a mental standpoint and an emotional standpoint, that's really interesting. It's like this first came to me. I like my state of being, which I first experienced post-cancer when I was introduced to meditation, and my mental state post quite a significant period of meditation, but that came quite quickly within that period, was just a mental state which was like, wow, this just feels good. And how I respond to what goes on around me, that I seem so much more like stoical in nature, or philosophical, calmer about things, far less emotionally reactive, far less beholden to what goes on around me. So that from a mental point of view, that's certainly how I judge it. And I now not know. Wow, that's the doorbell going somewhere. Okay, just give us 2 moments.
No problem. Well, I'll talk about how I... Oh, that was very brief. I was about to get into my definition, but rather than jump in, I'll let you continue.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, mentally, am I calm? Am I balanced? You know, am I able to make good decisions? And also, how do I affect the people around me? This is something, you know, we talk a lot about personal health, but this idea of faith and spirituality is this idea that we're part of something bigger. Well, we are all part of something very obviously bigger than us, and that's communities, societies, families, friendship circles. And that's just at a very material level that we can understand, you know, don't even get into the word of spirituality and greater consciousness and stuff like that. But we are all part of something bigger, and how I affect those around me and also how I'm affected by those around me is one sort of measure of how healthy I feel I am. If I feel like I'm having a positive impact on those around me, that's good. And also if I feel that I'm not negatively impacted, or that I am resilient to the effects of those around me, for want of another term, that's something. And I guess that ties into the social well-being side then as well, is how do I feel around other people? And this is an interesting bit, because for me, I go through phases of feeling very insecure in groups of people I know. You know, close friends, I probably have, you know, very small circle, very, very small circle now of close friends compared to when I was, say, maybe at university in the years and after that. You know, where my family, there's just me, mum and dad here, but there's big family in India and in Germany, but I don't really know them as such. So there's an element of social insecurity for me there as well. But there are times when I do certain things that actually all those seem to disappear for me, and I respond and interact with others far better than I do at other times. And that's really interesting to me in terms of the better we are, we can be within ourselves, the better we can be with other people. That story of who you're the product of the 5 people you're around the most, I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sort of diverging here. But yeah, physically, that I've got big physical capacity to do the job that I need to do, which is a squash coach, and also to be a better squash player. I want to be, and I believe that, you know, going forward, I want to be that as I get older. Mentally, that I'm calm, I make good decisions, I'm not reactive, emotionally reactive, I can respond as opposed to react. That I find when I'm in a good place, I'm more empathetic to other people. Whereas other times, if I'm in a bad place, I'm not. And so that's often a signal for me. And then, yeah, from a social side, feeling connected to people, for me, I think it is what it boils down to, feeling connected.
I like your answer. That's actually given me some pause to think about my own definition. And I realized a few years ago, fairly recently, that my own definition was a little narrow. I think I defined it almost entirely in the physical, in terms of how I felt physically. And yeah, that was great for a long time. And yeah, I just want to talk about that briefly, because I think it is a blessing if you do feel good in your body. Perhaps that's something that you discover at some point in your life through a movement practice or a sport, something that you enjoy. And not everybody has that. A lot of people haven't discovered it yet or never will discover it at all. And I was highly motivated, I think, to try and share that once I realized, you know, how that not everybody has this. that I felt that this is something that I need to try to communicate to people, that there's a simple joy in feeling good in your body. I think it comes back to that evolutionary question that we're talking about. One view of evolutionary pressures is that it's all about survival. It's hard scrabble. The predator only runs after the prey to get what it needs, and the prey is only running for, you know, running for its life. But I think that's a limited view. Yeah. I suspect that even animals feel a certain joy in movement. Anyone who's got pets know that cats and dogs play. They do physical things for fun. And yet it might be tied into some kind of evolutionary drive. You know, the cat plays with the ball, perhaps because it's rehearsing catching a mouse, but they're still doing things that feel good. So I don't think we're entirely driven, or should be entirely driven, by fear and necessity. I think we can also be driven by what feels good. And that's going to largely take us in the right direction when it comes to movement. However, as I said, a few years ago, I realized that this frame was a little bit limited, and I started to run into some issues that I'll just sort of describe broadly as stress related. So probably overwork, overthinking, that type of scenario. And they gradually went from something that was unexamined, perhaps let's pigeonhole it now in the mental side of my life. They spilled over into the physical. And that was the wake-up call I needed to start having a broader view of how I was living my life, really. So I felt physically I was doing everything right. I wasn't really addressing balance in terms of stress load and really feeling like I was doing work that fulfilled me. I was doing work that was mostly fulfilling, but there were still some things there that I hadn't addressed. You got into some other things as well, which I think for me are still things that I'm working on. More harmonious relationships with people who are close to me. I found it really interesting that you mentioned sort of that social ease as well, being comfortable in wider social settings. I think it's very easy now in the modern environment to live in a way where our social groups are really, really small. We're connected with tons of people digitally. We know tons of people, but we can have very superficial relationships with people that we work with. You might work in a company of 100 or 1,000 people and know a lot of names, but you could have very limited interactions with them. So that's something as well, I think. It's certainly an area in my life that I'm thinking about a lot more now than I had in the past.
Yeah. And I think, that's good to hear that you're thinking that. And I think for a lot of us, because we don't understand that these things all are having an impact on our health, I think it is coming out, this idea of social connectedness. It is a big thing now and has been for a few years. But it's also interesting to me that this is, like, you know, one of the questions that people, or one of the comments people come up with about health is just, it's so hard, it's so difficult. And, you know, we've touched on the environment and the foods we eat and stuff like that, but social connection, I believe, is again one of the reasons it's so difficult, especially if you're in a place where you've become unhealthy and you need to change. The problem is when you need to change, you potentially lose you change your values to that of your social tribe. So for me, an example of that, a personal example, is at university, going out drinking was a big part of our social well-being. I felt incredibly connected to people, and I'm going down to a friend's 25th wedding anniversary of someone I met in 1987, and I'm going to their wedding anniversary now. I'm reconnecting with those, but I feel less connected with those people now than I did then. one, because we moved apart and stuff, but I moved away from those values of drinking. And some of them probably have as well, and then values of work and all that. But it was like, it's difficult. I realized when I had cancer and I stopped drinking first off, I drank red wine medicinally, bizarrely, but I didn't go off on the binges. And it was like, well, that's all I used to do with my friends, was go out drinking after work. And now I haven't got that anymore. And that's what people, like, I think one of the difficulties is the threat to their social connection of doing some of the things we're talking about is massive. And that's a higher price to pay than some of the things they are suffering with. That's my observation. Going carnivore for me has been interesting. Again, challenges, it makes it difficult to go for meals with people and stuff like that, and go actually find somewhere where you can eat adequately for what you need without it costing an absolute fortune. So again, that threatens some aspect of my social connection. What do I do? Do I come off the diet? Do I keep on it? Do I explain? How do they feel about me? I'm now somewhat different, and so it is interesting. I think the world is improving in that sense, because, the whole diversity, inclusiveness and all of that side of things, whilst I feel it can be a little bit forced at times, I think there has to be a recognition that we are very tribal at heart. That's part of our evolutionary past. And how we deal with that is again, a big part of how we respond to other people around us. So I do want to acknowledge for those people who are listening, whether it be on Facebook or whether it's on YouTube, when we put these up on YouTube, that if there is stuff that you want to do, we understand that if it's different to what other people are doing or it challenges your beliefs, that, yeah, we get it. It is very difficult. It took total catastrophe in my life for me to change some of the things I've done. If you talk to me about not eating Chinese takeaways, even just a couple of years ago, don't be ridiculous. But now I'm at a place where I potentially would not eat. I don't think I even miss it anymore now. But yeah, so sorry, I've expanded there, broadened into why being healthy for a lot of people, it may be difficult, that social connection. This is all interacted. Everything works two ways. Our social connection plays a part in our health. Our health can play a part in our social connection, how well we can connect to other people. But I like to think that we can, and in a way, like you were saying, evolution has designed us that social connection is beneficial for us. And we can see that with hormonal responses. If you read Dr. Hamilton's book, Five Effects, Side Effects of Kindness, some fascinating stuff in there about gratitude and doing kind acts to other people or even observing them. We talked about in the last podcast or the one before that, the Rosito effect, or in Spain, why we think people can drink and smoke and still seemingly have long, healthy lives. And the fact that researchers now believe that social connection plays a part of that. Well, one of the key hormones in social connection is oxytocin. And oxytocin has been shown to be protective of heart disease. So again, we start seeing not only at a conceptual level, but actually at a biological, physical level, how all these things interact. Sorry, loads of stuff thrown at you there.
That's great. I think I said earlier that the things that you need to do to be healthy are not necessarily that complicated, not necessarily that difficult to understand. However, as a coach, I know that making change from where you are is the hard part. Implementing the changes is often harder than understanding what the changes are. If there are half a dozen things that most people would get a huge benefit from, we could probably explain that in a few minutes. Maybe we'll do that on another podcast. But for people to actually move from where they are now to implementing these changes is where the work is.
Yes.
I remember just a little anecdote on that. You talk about social connection and how that has a huge bearing on your results. I remember many years ago when I was first exploring ideas about fitness, reading a bodybuilding magazine, and it said, very bluntly, if you want to be successful at this, ditch all of your friends who are not bodybuilders. It's very true. You know, the people that you surround yourself with will have a huge bearing on the results that you see. But also, we don't want to necessarily go to those kinds of extremes of cutting off people that we have good, meaningful connections with over dietary choices. That could be getting a little ridiculous. But yeah, I think another reason why change is so difficult is also just the momentum of our lives. We do things a certain way for a certain amount of time, that making a change becomes quite intimidating. It becomes something that's we can have a lot of apprehension about. Even if you're not feeling great in yourself physically, there's probably habits that you have that you enjoy. And we have this idea culturally, I think, that being healthy is all about restriction and difficulty. We have these memes like no pain, no gain. So the only way you can get physically stronger is through punishing yourself. We have this whole concept of a diet. So if you look at the dictionary definition of the word diet, it actually has two meanings, which sound similar at first, but are pretty different. So this is the definition that I've had in my mind for a long time, but I think maybe the majority of people have this second definition. So the first definition that I came across is a diet is just the food and drink usually eaten or drunk by a person or group. So in other words, it's your habits, whatever you do on a normal mm-hmm. basis, that is your diet.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no implication of any kind of restriction or necessarily planning. It's just a description of what you normally do.
Mm-hmm.
But the second definition, which I think is probably now the more commonly used definition, is an eating plan in which somebody eats less food or only particular types of food because they want to become thinner or for medical reasons. So okay. If that's the more commonly understood idea of what a diet is, I think that just speaks to this idea that people think that health is all on the other side of some restriction and difficulty. So it's not a very appealing path for people in the first place, to go from where they are, probably enjoying life to some extent, even if they're not getting the health results that they want, to go into this path of limitation and restriction. I would say it's somebody who I feel is kind of on the other side of that, that fortunately it's once you do start making these changes, whether you do them quickly or whether you do them gradually, it's actually a lot easier on the other side than you think it's going to be. And you mentioned not really wanting Chinese takeaways anymore. But I definitely went through a period where I'd cut certain things out and I still wanted them. But after a little while, there's certain things that you look at and think, I can't believe I ever used to do that. That just doesn't even appeal to me at all. Yeah. So it doesn't all have to be as difficult as we're sometimes sold that it is. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree totally. And I think there are other things that come into it as well, our cultural beliefs, our personal beliefs. A little bit of what you like is good for you, all these little snippets that come out, you know, it's good to let your hair down and all of this sort of stuff. I think they tie into bigger things such as purpose. There's less need for that type of thing if there's a purpose that you're working towards, because the fact that we're working to our purpose keeps us fulfilled, happy perhaps. But the difficulty, you're right, I mean, people say to me, it's like, you know, and a lot of they'll say, oh, you shouldn't restrict what you eat. Now we've talked about carnivore animal based diet as it's can be used as a strict elimination diet to find out potentially what is affecting you. But I would also argue that there's another aspect to it. We call it restriction, and that's because of what we consider is available as food today. And that's what we're talking about. And so how we define food is interesting. And I think we'll touch on this in future podcasts, the ultra processed food. What is the motivation behind a food product and the business selling that food product? But yeah, just wanted to touch on that there, that actually when you're eating the right foods and you'll know it, that actually your life is able to expand and become less restrictive. So for those people with arthritis, and maybe if they're on a typical industrialized Western diet, that diet may well be contributing in a major way to that arthritis. And yes, you can have all the foods you want that make you feel good in the moment, but when you start linking the feeling of the arthritis to the foods you're eating, or the linking of your emotional reactivity to the high sugar fat foods that you're having, or the linking of the food to the cancer diagnosis you have, then all of a sudden, all of this stuff becomes a lot easier. And then, God willing, you get to the place where you can start living a life. I remember when at university, I used to go surfing with friends, and actually the same friends that I'm going to see this weekend for his wedding anniversary. I could never surf because I was too fat. I just couldn't get myself up on the board. I couldn't do it at all. And I was too hungover most of the time to catch the waves. Like, you know, the two mates would get up, get out in the early waves and stuff. And I was too busy lolling around in bed, nursing my hangover, waiting for the joys of getting drunk later that night. And then post-cancer, I went through losing a lot of weight on the protocol I've talked about before. I got physically fitter. We went to Lanzarote, and I thought, oh, let's have a surf lesson out here. And the next thing I know, I'm able to jump on the board really easy. After doing burpees in CrossFit, you know, 30 burpees for fun because you were late. And I got onto this surfboard and shit, I'm surfing. That's not restriction for me. Yes, I was restricting some of my food, but the food no longer at that stage seemed like a restriction because I was enjoying what I was eating. And I was enjoying so much more of what I could do in life. And that's the same thing here now, is like, yeah, my food is restricted. You know, I can't, you know, I'm not going to, and it's a personal restriction. It's a choice, but I'm not going to have that Chinese takeaway because I've done the experiments now over the last year to realize how that actually affects me, and that I can now link that to so many negative side effects that I just don't want to do it anymore. It's like, you know, alcohol hangover for me is a big one. You know, people know that the hangover is due to alcohol, but it still doesn't outweigh the going out and getting smashed. And there's the cultural, the social connection and stuff like that. I got to a stage in my life where now the hangover just totally outweighs it. Occasionally, if it's a spur of the moment thing, I end up drinking and I enjoy it, but I then regret it for the next 3 days. But so it is simple, but it doesn't need to be restrictive, and it does change. Your outlook changes, but that process of change isn't necessarily easy. And I think it is easier if you can find like-minded people coaching. If your family and friends are on board, then it's great. That's the biggest thing for me that makes things easier, is if your family and friends are thinking in the same way. Do you get rid of them if they're not? No, clearly, because that's like it may come to that for some people, but you know, it for me, it's all about trying to be, you know, work through the obstacles we have. That's part of our mental resilience and growing through and finding ways forward so that you can still live with someone you love, even despite the fact one might be vegetarian, one might be carnivore, although I'm not quite sure how that works yet. But
yeah, I think I like the expression, if you have a big enough dream, you don't need a crisis. And I think I would always prefer to be motivated by moving towards a positive than running away from something you're afraid of. I think that's just, you know, it's a more enjoyable, more healthy way to live your life. Unfortunately, it does take a crisis sometimes to get us to make a change. I'm glad you brought up the idea of belief as well, because and I'm going to throw another quote out there, one which I bring up all the time, Margaret Mead. It's easier to get a man to change his religion than it is to change his diet. So
I think it's the other way around. Change your diet. It's easier to get a man to change his diet rather than his religion. You're right. It's easier to get a man to change his religion. Yeah, sorry. I'm getting myself confused here. No, you're right. Yeah.
So I think what she's saying there is that, you know, our level of belief around food sometimes outweighs our, you know, our beliefs in religion. And I found this to be very true. And certainly with conversations I've had with members of my family and people who are already have like an active interest in what they're eating, whether it's good for them or not. So I found people are often very attached to ideas. And I think this is a huge mistake because it leads you into the trap of if somebody challenges your ideas, you feel personally criticized. Now, this is something I've heard Joe Rogan talk about, and I think he's spot on with this, is that, you know, we should be able to explore ideas without attaching our ego to them. And if we have a conversation with somebody that disagrees, we should be able to dispense with ideas if we come across better ideas. As soon as you start attaching yourself to them, attaching your identity to them, as I'm a vegetarian, I'm a vegan, I'm a carnivore, it really shuts down your ability to explore ideas like a scientist. I think a better approach is to have a slightly detached view from ideas and take this sort of scientific approach of, well, I'm going to try something out. I don't know whether it's going to work or not, but I've consumed some information which suggests that this is something worth trying. I'm going to give it a go. And if people laugh at me, if people criticize me, if it doesn't work out at all, fine. But I'm just going to try it as an experiment. And I think that frame of thinking would benefit people a great deal, because I have seen that resistance an awful lot with people when I'm coaching them, is that they're not that open to suggestions of doing things differently because they've done something a certain way for so long that they feel personally criticized. If they feel like they've got to admit that they're wrong to change a way that they're behaving. And I don't think that's necessary. It doesn't mean that just because you consume some information from a source and you went along with that doesn't mean that you're, you know, somehow stupid or you know, need to feel criticized.
No, although I totally agree with you, although I think it's almost a built-in reaction. There's a term in coaching and psychology, amygdala hijack, and amygdala is part of our sort of inner survival brain. So if you think of like a basic model, if you use Steve Peters' model of the brain, you've got the human brain, which is the outer brain built on top of the chimp brain, which is our survival brain. And then you've got the computer, which is all our saved behaviors that we call upon whenever we come into a situation. Now, those beliefs, I think, are in those computers, and they're typically installed without our knowledge, you know, about the best way, communist versus capitalist. If you grow up in a capitalist world, you're largely going to believe that capitalism is right. Same in the communists, although I think that there are plenty of examples where that's not the case. Religion, if you're born into a Muslim family, you're likely to be a Muslim. If you're born into a Christian family, you're likely to be Christian. Likewise, if you're born into a vegetarian family, you're likely to believe that eating vegetables is the right way forward, or, all these types of things. And some of those beliefs we get over time during life, but many are installed in the first 5 to 7 years of our life without us knowing about it. And that's how we learn about our culture. So cultural beliefs play a big part. And, one of the dietary things that you mentioned is is the number of people that say to me, I believe in moderation, a little bit of everything. I think that's because we talk about a well-balanced diet, or I believe in a well-balanced diet. But they're looking at it from a culture that has, what are affectionately called frankenfoods, our ultra-processed foods, all these, high-fat, high-sugar, commercially produced foods. Is a little bit of them good or not? I don't know. Personally, my belief is that they're not, and my life is much better without them. But when we're challenged, when that belief is challenged, our amygdala kicks off, our survival brain threatens, and it discounts that knowledge. Even if you've received the benefits of some of that stuff, I think we talked about on the movement stuff, we were talking about range of motion testing stuff. I know this is a bit of an aside, but I've helped people with injury problems that solve problems within minutes, and they've just totally discounted it because it doesn't fit the belief that it can't be fixed in minutes, because their physio or their doctor has said it couldn't be, and refuse to accept or use that methodology going forward. And it's kind of bizarre. That work on beliefs, if you're struggling with something, is we're both exploring that at the moment, with Chris Walton's work and Bruce Lipton, the idea of, can we change our beliefs? And that all again ties back into social connectedness as well. Do you want to change your beliefs, because that threatens all of that? So I think that the approach is great. Yeah, I think if we want to get on better, we do not need to start, maybe examining our beliefs and understanding where they come from. And as you say, experiment with stuff which challenges that, to be more inclusive, to be accept diversity and stuff like that. We have to do that anyway. We have to understand that different religions have different rules and different ideas, that different cultures. I remember an article in the Daily Mail about the barbaric diet of the Koreans eating dogs, because to a Westerner, eating a dog is absolute sacrilege. But it's just another human being brought up in another culture. And they're, for me, they're no better, no worse. It's like, we don't agree with it, but, if I needed to eat and a dog was all that was available, hopefully those circumstances will never come across. It's me. It's stuff that I could eat if I needed to. Would you be the person in the Andes crashed in the plane who couldn't eat their dead fellow friend to survive? Would you stick to your beliefs and not eat that person even though they were dead? Or would you eat them because you knew you needed to survive? Don't know. Doesn't necessarily need to get that extreme, but with what we're talking about, experiment. Have a look at what you believe. And I think it typically will, either if you want something better, like you said, going to something positive that you're finding it difficult to get to, or fear is a massive motivator. And I think the two work in conjunction, especially if you have had that crisis, they work well together, because if you get a certain distance away from the fear, it becomes less motivating. And it's a massive, I think you definitely at that stage need something positive to go towards. I found that in my life many a time. But yeah, experiment, try it, accept it, your slate, question. I think this is what we're about. Let's look at the philosophy of all of this. What is health? What does it mean to you? Are you going to die old and decrepit with Alzheimer's and arthritis and diabetes, or can you live to 120 doing backflips? I want to be in the second quota.
For sure. Well, we've been talking for just over an hour. I think the points you've made there sum things up really nicely. Have a dream, something that you're moving towards, a vision for where you want to be. Question your beliefs. I think those two points, if people take those away as something to think about, those would be very useful. Are there any other things that you want to add, Mike, before we finish?
Yes. So anyone who's watching this on Facebook now or gets to see it later, if there's anything you want to comment on, comment on it. What are your beliefs about diet? Are we crackers for doing carnivore? And why your belief is that? If you watch it on YouTube later when we've uploaded, again, comment on it. If there's stuff that you found interesting that you'd like us to expand on, again, contact us in the comments. And maybe if you wanted to just have a more in-depth private conversation, again, just contact us, direct messages or whatever. That would be great. We both want to open up the conversation around what health is. And I know I struggled for a long time understanding it. And I think I'm still coming across things that are opening my eyes and improving my understanding of this. I don't believe I will ever fully comprehend it, but there are straightforward ways to be healthy. Eat whole foods, have a good set of friends and family, have a purpose in life, but they're not automatically already there. Move. Don't exercise. Exercise is like diet. It's a prescription. Enjoy moving. Yeah, that's about it.
Perfect way to finish, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, guys. See you soon. Bye.